Horn's Real Good Stuff is coming out from Pucci Press. I've also got a copy of Real Stuff from Swifty Morales Press. He's been in Fantagraphics collections. He's been in Top Shelf collections. The Legend of Wild Man Fisher is one of the titles that he did with J.R. Williams. And J.R. Williams is also in the studio today, one of the artists that has illustrated Dennis Eichhorn's stuff, along with Pat Moriarty, one of the great cartoonists who's known for Big Mouth as well as Dennis Eichhorn's Real Stuff. Welcome, everybody.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's talk about the new book. Let's talk about Dennis P. Eichhorn's Real Stuff.
Okay.
Real Good Stuff.
Oh, sorry. Real good stuff.
Yeah. This is Dennis P. Eichhorn speaking about it. Pat, across from
me. And this was a Kickstarter campaign, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. See, Pat kind of put it together in that he knew some of these up-and-coming young cartoonists.
And I should say, this is Pat speaking, that they would start saying things to me like, you and Jim Blanchard and J.R. Williams and Bob Crabb and Denny Eichhorn, you guys never got your due. You guys were the shit. Fantagraphics had a lot of great comics, but we started peeling back the paint and we saw you cartoonists that didn't get your due. And I started going, oh, some late love.
Music.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
And then they said, sugar. You know what? I sure wish there would be a new Real Stuff. And I go, you know what? Denny's a friend of mine.
He's still alive. He hasn't
live that
died
far
yet.
And they start like, let's do a new issue of Real Stuff. And so then I gave Denny's email address to Tom Van Dusen and Max Klotfelter. I've seen almost all the artwork for this book that Denny's got, and I'm super fired up for it.
Pat's got a story in it. One of the stories is called Gone But Not Forgotten, and it's a story that I wrote back in the 80s, and it got lost for like 20 years, you know, almost. And so it just kind of disappeared, and then I found a copy of it about a year ago and gave it to Pat, and then he resurrected it. So it's like a lost story.
And that kind of what started
story.
Denny's book, because right. Tom and Max and me started going like, let's do a book. And then it started with the Kickstarter, and they got the money within 48 hours, the fastest successful Kickstarter
really?
I've ever
yeah,
seen.
It made a lot.
Practically
well, part of the reason for
money.
That was is that Boing Boing had been republishing my work online, see? And Boing Boing gave the Kickstarter attempt a big plug. And that helped a lot. And another thing is that for the last 3 years, I've been writing a football blog. And so in the course of writing it, I put in a lot of other stuff, memoir stories, you know. And so Tom Van Dusen and Max wanted me to take some of those stories and fill them out and write scripts for them. And that's the stuff they wanted to use for the Real Good Stuff. So I let them pick some of the stories they liked and juiced them up and wrote scripts for them.
And for anybody who's not familiar with Denny Eichhorn's work, I've got a copy of Real Stuff by Dennis P. Eichhorn and a host of artists. And let me just read
a few of these two guys that are on there.
Yeah, just a few of the cartoonists in addition to J.R. Williams and Pat Moriarty who have contributed to this book. The Hernandez brothers are here. Roberta Gregory is here. Joe Sacco, Drew Friedman, Mary Fleener, Dave Cooper, Charles Burns, Chester Brown.
Who's who?
It is an absolute who's who of the independent comics scene.
Everybody but Robert Crumb, he wouldn't do it.
But you're talking about the Real Stuff collection from the 1990s. Yeah. A lot of the same artists are in the new Real Stuff. Mary Fleener's one
real
of them.
Good
Jim
stuff.
Blanchard, Jim Blanchard
Pat.
And me. I wish J.R.
I wish
in
he was stupid. He just won't come out of retirement.
Yeah.
These are the
it's
these are
pay.
Aaron Lang's probably.
Those are the raciest stories.
This looks like Real Smut, and Real Smut was sort of an offshoot of Real Stuff.
Yeah, it was. Real Smut, we decided to take the sex stories out of Real Stuff and put them all in Real Smut.
Real Smut's
so
a different
after Real
comic
Stuff
book.
Number 9, it's none of the Real Stuffs have any sex in them for the last 11 issues.
And for those that don't know, Real Smut is a comic book that Fantagraphics put on their Eros line so Denny could do autobiographical stories that were racier. And
right.
And so Real Stuff and Real Smut became two different comics, and Denny switched gears when he wrote those stories for those
yeah.
two different
right.
books.
Describe what we're looking at right
well,
now.
Well, you're looking at Aaron Lang's rendering of me having sex with my girlfriend who's standing on her head. And so he's
the story's called Topsy Turvy.
He's illustrating this. I mean,
And I still say that maybe I'm jaded because I've been a cartoonist for so many years, but like this stuff doesn't offend me. To me, it looks like pure comedy to me.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like a HBO rated level humor. You know,
it's just that we can't write our material for children. I mean, in other words, I you don't hold back because some little kid might see it sometime, you know. And it's certainly not designed to be sold to kids, and I wouldn't want a little kid to see it because it would confuse them maybe, or even scare them. I don't know.
Well, that's the confusing thing about comic books that goes back to this preconception that all comics are for kids, and comics that aren't drawn for kids are some sort of twisted wrongness because they're supposed to be for kids.
Right.
But, you know, that's...
I just want to mention that Dennis P. Eichhorn is the longtime author of the Real Stuff series of comics. And it's called Real Stuff because, unlike all of these autobiographical comics that are out there, the stories you have, Dennis, are these life and death stories about road trips gone wrong and urban nightmares and things like that. I mean, these are really...
Lots of violence and murder and drugs.
Yeah,
there's
that's because Denny's a writer and not a cartoonist. Most cartoonists, in my opinion, have boring, sedentary lives where they sit home and draw all the time. They don't have exciting stories to tell about their day staying home drawing pictures. But Denny's a writer and he's actually had a life.
And there's a few
so
people...
So he
that,
has a lot more interesting stories.
Look at Joe Sacco.
You're sort of a Ken Kesey or something,
Right.
And what I love is when the stories get dark, when Denny's stories get dark, you guys, your artwork is light enough that it leavens the intensity of everything. And
that's intentional on my part, as Pat Moriarty, I should say.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, like the Death of a Junkie story that was just on Boing Boing was such a dark story. I remember drawing that I thought, I'm going to try to make some sort of contrast between the storyline and the style of the art and make the artwork look kind of innocent and a little bit simple so that when you read the story, it seems extra dark because the artwork doesn't really hint that.
Yeah,
so Death of a Junkie is actually one of the ones that I remember. It was Denny moving to Seattle from Idaho and meeting up with a whole bunch of other rural Idaho folks who had...
A house on Lower Queen Anne Hill. This is Denny, by the way. Yeah, they're all living in a house on Lower Queen Anne Hill and dealing pot, which was a big growth industry at the time. And I went over to buy some pot, and while I was in the house, I used the restroom, and on the way to it, I noticed that there was a guy laying on the bed and not breathing, and when I looked at him a little closer, I could tell he was dead. So I told the other guys about it, and they confirmed, yep, sure enough, he's dead all right. You know, apparently, he'd been a serious heroin addict, and one of them had told him that if he shot up some Mr. Clean, that it would take the edge off, and he believed him, and he shot up some Mr. Clean, and it killed him almost instantly. And so I got out of there as quick as I could, and I ran into one of these people later on, and he told me that they had just taken this guy and rolled him up in a rug and took him up near Woodinville and dumped him into a gully to get rid of him. And I believed him because I, you know, they were all like that. They would have done that to me if I'd have died there. You know, they didn't want to call the cops for anything. And
I don't think they even knew what the guy's real name was.
No, he didn't have
was.
Any
they
history.
So little
he,
had, about
he,
him.
He went by the name Squirrel, I think. And
didn't even know his real name.
No, and he'd never gotten any mail or anything. They had no idea for, you know, who he was or what he was, you know.
It's fascinating to look back at this era where people could sort of disappear. Still, back then.
That's true.
Yeah, it wasn't as much on radar. You know, it's like we're in a different world already compared to how it was 20 years ago, considering how surveilled we are. It's like the powers that be know where you are at every moment, and they try to market to you that way. But like in the days of 20 years ago, you know, lots of stuff went by
Now they'd get a...
Privately.
Probably Squirrel would have a DNA sample floating around somewhere, you know, from the last mental institution he was in or something like that, and they could figure out who he was.
Or his fellow junkies would be like, hey, Squirrel hasn't posted on Facebook in several days.
You know, did he unfriend me? Did he get a bad nickel bag or something? What happened? You know?
Some of the comics that you guys do in Real Stuff and in your collection, Pat Moriarty, Popcorn Pimps, in JR's work, I mean, this is all a fantastic document of the scene. Seattle in the 80s and 90s was the place where all the creative people went, where rents were cheap, where musicians and cartoonists were plying their trade. Fantagraphics was coming up, Sub Pop Records. And it was very independent. There were a lot of mini comics back then. There were a lot of self-publishing. There were zines. you know, and I remember some of the crazy comics that you drew about road trips that you would have across the Northwest, you know, around the Snake River with all these hairpin turns and all these all-night drives. They're just hair-raising
stories.
Oh, yeah,
like with Wildman Fisher, so, you know, that's in that book, yeah, when...
I'm holding a copy of The Legend of Wild Man Fisher, which is written by Dennis P. Eichhorn and drawn by J.R. Williams. And first off, let's set the stage a little bit. Let's talk about who Wild Man Fisher was.
Okay, well, let's let J.R. talk about that because he knows the ins and outs.
Larry Fisher, as a young man, he had emotional problems. He was diagnosed as being paranoid schizophrenic. At some point, he decided he was tired of being shy and not having any friends. His vehicle for coming out of his shell was to sing. He didn't play any instruments. He would just sing a cappella, and he got the impression that people enjoyed what he was singing.
Oh, and people did. I mean, he became famous on the Dr. Demento show. And
that's true.
And in this book, The Legend of Wild Man Fisher.
That's later.
Yeah. Yeah. At this point, Larry is
hanging out in front of the Whiskey A Go-Go on Sunset Strip, screaming his lungs out, asking people, "Do you want to hear an original song for a dime?" And begging for change by singing and making people nuts because...
Actually, Frank Zappa gave him the cardboard guitar.
Oh,
but I mean
the short version of the story is that eventually Frank Zappa decided to make an album with Larry Wildman Fisher.
Now, didn't Frank just pull up in his car one day and see Larry on the Sunset Strip?
I suppose it's possible. However, Larry did appear on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, and I'm not sure if that was before. Or
I think it was
after the fact.
I think it wasn't. I can't remember the name of the guy that was Frank Zappa's attorney.
Herb Cohen?
Yeah. I talked to him one time about this, and Herb Cohen says that he was in the limousine with Frank Zappa.
Oh, I'll be darned.
And they were going to listen to somebody at the Whiskey, and they saw Wild Man Fisher. And they heard him singing. And
so that was where Zappa heard him.
And that is when it happened, you know.
Well, the album was really kind of a disturbing thing because in a double record, there was plenty of time for Larry to sing a lot of his songs. Most of them were unaccompanied. He sang them a cappella as he would have on the street. However, Zappa did compose some music for some of the tracks. But in between, you get an awful lot of back history. Larry's stories about being committed to mental institutions and the difficulties that he had relating the ordinary status quo world. And if you listen to the entire album, it was actually sort of a disturbing portrait of a disturbed person.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking about Dennis Eichhorn's Real Good Stuff, and we've been talking about The Legend of Wild Man Fisher. My guests are Dennis P. Eichhorn, J.R. Williams, and Pat Moriarty. And let's do some more music from Wild Man Fisher right now. And we're back in the studio with Dennis P. Eichhorn, J.R. Williams, and Pat Moriarty. We've got a couple of new collections here. One of them is called Dennis P. Eichhorn's Real Good Stuff from Poochie Press.
Well, let me introduce everybody.
Yeah, sure.
This is over here on my left in the cloud is J.R. Williams.
J.R. here, just hi, so you hi, recognize my voice
and,
if and I happen to say anything.
Me, he's in the cumulus nimbus of your mind is Pat Moriarty.
Hello, this is Pat here. Glad to be here.
And over here on the right is Conch. This is his show. And back over here, I'm Dennis P. Eichhorn, and I drove here from Seattle with Pat Moriarty, and JR lives here, and he met us, and we're all three here.
And the three of us have a lot of history together, because JR used to live up in Seattle back in the 1990s.
In this area that Conch is talking about here.
I was one of the artists who moved to Seattle after Fantagraphics relocated there. And it was a fantastic time to be up there.
It really was a fun thing.
To conclude the story about Larry Fisher, Wild Man, Denny had decided it would be cool if he could hire Larry to do some concerts.
What year was this?
Oh, 70 and 71.
So I'll let Denny pick up the story here.
Okay. I was living in Spokane, and some friends and I decided to take our dope dealing profits and become concert promoters. And so, you know, you want your albums to come to life, you know. And so we had an album of Wild Man Fisher, and so we wanted to bring him to life, I guess. And somehow, through sheer luck, I was able to contact him.
You lured him up to Idaho?
No, to Spokane.
Oh, okay.
See, what happened was I called the L.A. Free Press, thinking that they might know what street corner he was standing on.
Sitting on. Working on.
I think it's in the book. Who answered the phone?
Ed Sanders.
Ed Sanders answered the phone of the Fugs. He was sitting at a desk at the L.A. Free Press that day. Yeah. He was in L.A. and he worked for the L.A. Free Press. Hello, Ed Sanders. And and I said, yeah, okay. And I introduced myself. He'd never heard of me, but I told him I wanted to. And listen, no shit. He said, oh, yeah, he's right on the street, right outside. You know, I'll go get him. So he went out and got him and brought him in, you know. And I talked to him on the phone. Hello, who's this? You know, and finally, I offered him a couple of gigs up in Spokane and Lewiston and Moscow, Idaho. Anyway, Ed was acting as his agent. He jumped in and was working me.
Negotiating.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. That's a pair to draw to, huh? So anyway, we wound up closing the deal, and I had to send Wild Man a first-class airline ticket to Spokane. And I did, and off he came, you know, and I paid him in cash.
So, and then things went downhill.
Well, he did when we were driving, yes. It wound up with
a book's worth of material.
That's right.
That's from Real Stuff.
Well, flash forward to the
Legend of Wild Man Fisher, which is available from Top Shelf by Dennis B. Eichhorn and J.R. Williams.
That's right.
And this is J.R. again. And once in San Diego, one of my artist friends, I can't remember if it was Wayno or Dennis Worden, but I introduced them to Wild Man, and he was doing little sketchbook drawings at the time for $5. And he was drawing his own little characters. He had these bees that he was drawing. Oh, I'm a bee. But I think it must have been Dennis Worden, because it sounds like something Dennis would do. He said, draw Frank Zappa. So Larry begrudgingly scribbled a quick face and handed it back and wanted his $5. But then Dennis looked at the book and said, hey, you didn't draw a mustache on him. And Larry was like, all right. Scribbled it on there. But Larry had kind of a hard time with Frank, because he felt that Frank had swindled him somehow.
Yeah. And he felt everybody swindled him. Yeah.
Didn't like to talk about it.
He turned on everybody. He turned on Billy Mumy eventually, you know.
So, Dennis, we've talked about some of the extreme behavior and personality traits of Wild Man Fisher. Tell us some of the stories that you can find in The Legend of Wild Man Fisher, the book that you wrote and J.R. Williams illustrated. You had hair-raising moments during that tour that you arranged with Wild Man Fisher.
Oh, yeah. He almost wrecked us. He almost killed us. We were going over the mountains headed to Montana, and he grabbed hold of the steering wheel because he wanted to go back to the town we'd just been in. He wanted to go back and get a cheeseburger, and he jerked the wheel, and our car spun around on the ice and almost went over. You know, he almost
there was a us. There's a sheer cliff.
Yeah, I mean it scared me pretty bad. You know, but you know we didn't turn around. We went to the next town and bought him a cheeseburger.
And it's only because you are creative people yourself that you you know that you rode the wild pony, that you did not run away at the first sign of trouble.
I like the idea of seeing how crazy he really was.
None of us have ever really shied away from novelty of life.
And I have like some cartoonist friends that, you know, are kind of borderline something wrong with, you know, a little bit of a screw loose. I think a lot of creative people have a little bit of a screw loose. And so I'm not jaded by that anymore, fact. You know.
Well, let's talk about some of the other projects that are in the works.
Well, the stuff I've got going on right now is, like, I just finished my artwork for Denny's book. I've just done 2 pages for Suspect Device number 4. That's a comics anthology coming out soon by Josh Bayer. And I'm working on a 3-page story for the next issue of Mineshaft. And I'm working on a 5-page Charles Bukowski story that Dennis provided for me that I'm going to finish and see where I can get it published. And I've been working for Hovercraft Records down here in Portland. I just did a cover for Mythological Horses, their new record. It's being pressed right now, and I'm going to be doing a poster for an event in Portland here in December. That's like off the top of my head what I'm working on.
and the reason, this is Dennis again, the reason that I have Charles Bukowski poetry to give to Pat is that when I published a tabloid called the Northwest Extra back in the late 80s and early 90s, I contacted him. He liked Real Stuff Comics, and he wanted to contribute to the tabloid. So he sent me quite a few poems with the understanding that every time I used one, I'd pay him $25. And I've still got a few that I never published, and Pat has been rendering them for Mineshaft on
it. Yeah, and also I have to say that Bukowski started contributing to Big Mouth back in the 1990s through Dennis Eichhorn. And Denny said, do you care if my buddy Pat illustrates makes comics out of your poems? And he wrote a nice letter saying it was okay to do it. And so now I have like 5 checks that I sent to Charles Bukowski for $25 every time he let me illustrate one of his poems.
That also,
and then he would sign it. So I've got 5 checks with Bukowski's endorsements on them.
And having him be the original one led a lot of other people to pal up with you and contribute stories too.
Yeah, I did. That started a little bit of a snowball, you know, with like having Denny on board and Bukowski, then Robert Crumb, and then Harvey Picar, and then Henry Rollins, and then Penn and Teller, and it just snowballed from there. But it kind of started with Denny and Bukowski. And that's how Big Mouth, which was sort of like the flip side of Real Stuff. Real Stuff was autobiographical stories by one person with a bunch of different artists. Big Mouth was autobiographical stories by a bunch of different people with one artist. So it was kind of the switch of Real Stuff, and that's how it got started with Denny and Bukowski.
And then, what are you up to these days?
Yeah, well, Pat? I was going to say, why don't you all tell us about where listeners can find out about your work? First, Dennis.
Listeners can't find out very much about my work because I don't have a website.
What about Pucci Press, which is publishing a new book?
They are. It's Pucci Press, that's POOCHIEPRESS.net. They've got it all. They got Bogey and Bacall.
So, JR, listeners can find out more about your work on the web.
I'm one of the artists represented on the Comic Art Collective. It's a collective of alternative cartoonists and artists, including Peter Bagg, Dan Clowes, Jaime Hernandez, Jim Woodring. We all sell work there. You can also visit my blog, jrsprinceofdarkness.blogspot.com.
And Pat Moriarty, how can listeners find out more about your work?
Well, there is patmoriarty.com, and it's M-O-R-I-A-R-I-T-Y, the Moriarty with 2 I's. And then I have a patmoriarty.blogspot.com, which has got some updates and stuff. Those are the main 2 ways to get a hold of me. And I also sell artwork on the artcollective.com along with JR and those other artists. So.
Well, thank you all for showing up. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for coming in, and we hope that you'll visit the KBOO studios again sometime soon.
Will do. Thanks
we
for having
love
us.
To.
It's been too long for me.
I'd like to be an intern here.
I've actually done some programming here on a couple of occasions, but it was an awful long time ago.
Well, this has been a rollicking and freewheeling conversation here in the studio with Dennis P. Eichhorn, the writer behind the anthology collection, Dennis P. Eichhorn's Real Good Stuff, out from Poochie Press. It's hot off the press. Dennis, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us. It's been great.
And also in the studio are J.R. Williams Hello. And Pat Moriarty, who are two of the artists who have backed up some of Dennis's stories with pictures. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Hey, it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Great to be here. Thanks, Conch.
And you're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, S.W. Kontzer. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is @WordsAndPicture. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial at 90.7 FM and on the web at kboo.fm. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, December 12th. I'm Kristen Yount. Ukrainian decision makers will be in Brussels today. Ukrainians critical of President Yanukovych's decision to opt out of the long-negotiated European trade deal has created a climate of extreme unrest in Kiev, where protesters have occupied the city for weeks. Those in support of the European investors doing business in the Ukraine worry that Yanukovych might sign a completely different agreement with Vladimir Putin. Apparently, the option to enter a customs agreement with Russia is still on the table, and Yanukovych will meet with the Russian president next week. Meanwhile, U.S. lawmakers will contemplate imposing sanctions on the torn country for her treatment of peaceful protesters with violence. Thousands of specially appointed riot police have sent people to the hospital as they roughly disperse crowds in the center of Kiev. The sanctions would be diplomatic in nature. Ukrainian diplomats would be denied visas under the sanctions. Michigan now requires women to purchase separate insurance coverage to cover abortions they might have in the future. The measure affects those insured by private insurance. Since there wouldn't be an exception for rape or incest, opponents are calling it rape insurance. If a non-sexually active person, like a child or a teenager, gets raped and does not carry separate coverage and an abortion is deemed necessary, then the victim will have to pay out of pocket for the procedure. This bill passed. The final vote was 27 to 11. A similar bill passed last year, but was vetoed by Republican Governor Rick Snyder. But this time, because it's a citizen initiative that brought the bill before lawmakers, he cannot veto the bill, and the law moves forward because he doesn't even have to sign it. State Senator Gretchen Whitmer said, quote, "By moving forward on this initiative, Senate Republicans want to essentially require Michigan women to plan ahead and financially invest in health care coverage for potentially having their bodies violated and assaulted. Even worse, it would force parents to have similar and unthinkably terrible discussions about planning the same for their daughters. I've said it before and I will say it again. This is by far one of the most misogynistic proposals I have ever seen in the Michigan legislature." Machinists Union in the Puget Sound ended meetings this week with Boeing, makers of commercial airplanes. After a full-on rejection of a contract offer from Boeing by the union a month ago, the company began to look for contracts outside of Washington State. Boeing president and CEO Ray Conner met with Tim Roblowski, president of the Machinists Union District Lodge 751. Conner received a redrafted proposal to secure fabrication work of the 777X wing and final assembly work. Pirate Bay founder Gottfried Svartholm-Warg remains in solitary confinement after being extradited from Sweden to Denmark. Pirate Bay was founded in 2003 and is considered to be the largest BitTorrent tracker in the world, ever. His lawyer says that Gottfried shouldn't be treated as a dangerous criminal because the only charge against him could be hacking. However, it is unclear on what grounds, if any, Danish authorities are holding him. Apparently, Gottfried was already acquitted of charges in Sweden after being extradited from Cambodia. Julian Assange of WikiLeaks came out in support of the young man, describing him as a WikiLeaks consultant and a political prisoner, condemns the extradition to Sweden on trumped-up charges. The Brazilian Congress will decide whether or not to allow genetically modified Terminator seeds to be used. Plants grown from Terminator seeds die after harvest and do not propagate new seeds, forcing farmers to reinvest in seeds every year. 193 countries agreed to a moratorium on the use of these genetically modified seeds in the year 2000 at a UN convention on biological diversity. Pressure from major seed companies are leaning on the Brazilian government to allow for so-called controlled plots to be cultivated. This could set a dangerous precedent for the rest of the world because Brazil tops out as one of the largest agricultural forces in the world. Last night, a couple hundred people braved the freezing weather to pay tribute to the victims of the Clackamas Town Center shooting that happened exactly a year ago yesterday. A 22-year-old gunman walked into the mall full of Christmas shoppers and opened fire, killing three people. Families of the victims spent the last year advocating for stricter gun laws in the United States. However, last night they sadly admitted that no gun laws have been passed in Oregon or the United States in the past year. For some of the people present, it was their first time back at this shopping center since the deadly day. Thank you for listening to the News at Noon. For more, please tune in every weekday at 5 p.m. for the latest in local, national, and international news created by volunteers in our wee Southeast Portland studios.
And you're tuned to Community Radio, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis, and K220HR Hood River, K282BH Philomath. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams in Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control,